This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Cup of Cubby Blue. Your baseball is back, and the Cubs have been doing quite well after an excellent 5-6 homestand home for Cubs news, updates, and banter. We're proudly affiliated with the Fans First Sports Network and the Bleacher Bunch Network. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and as always, I'm joined by Danny Rocket. We're going to break it all down. How's it going, Danny?
Oh, I'm feeling great. Happy Eclipse Day, Sarah. There is a solar eclipse happening, which... you know, it bodes well celestially for the Chicago Cubs, obviously, because we're looking good. I mean, we're not in first place or anything, but we're looking like a good team. Just took two or three of the Dodgers. And hey, at least when the world ends with Armageddon and the rapture happens, the Cubs won't be in last after today's eclipse.
I mean, I don't know what I think about all this eclipse stuff. It's like a thing that happens because of the way the planets align. I just don't get all that jazzed about it either way. A few years ago when Chicago was in the path of totality, I was like not even going to go outside. And then I decided to. And I was glad I did. Like, I think it's interesting whenever we have these events that humanity all cares about at once. And it was nice to see all the people in Chicago like looking at the sky all at once. And also I don't know, man, like this... this is just not a thing that I get worked up about at all. I'm much more excited about the fact that it's like 66 degrees and sunny in Chicago and that I'm going to get a million steps today than anything else.
Well, except for the 95% blockage of the sun in about an hour and a half, which I've made my little cereal box viewer. My fourth grade education comes in handy yet once again with my cereal box viewer. You can see a picture of it on Twitter.
Maybe, but I don't think that that's going to make it colder.
What do you mean colder?
Well, so the reason I want to be outside is so that I can be outside and like be warm.
Right.
And I'm not entirely sure that the moon blocking the light of the sun makes it colder. I think that it's still going to be great.
It certainly doesn't Terrace Reserved. I can tell you that much.
Those are clouds. Like clouds blocking the sun's heat is different than...
the moon.
I could be wrong about this, but I'm relatively certain that like this is not going to make it colder on the planet Earth.
We're about to find out.
I mean, sure.
As the sun is blotted out by the moon.
Yeah. See, I was actually born on a total solar eclipse.
Ooh.
And for a long time, I wondered if that mattered astrologically, and then I decided astrology just doesn't matter at all. So I just really. I'd be a downer. If you're like really excited about the eclipse, I'm glad you're really excited about the eclipse. And if you made the glasses like Danny, knock yourself out. Don't stare directly at the sun, people. But I'm truly just like going to plow through my day, try to get as many steps as possible and watch the Cubs tonight with their West Coast road trip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a late one all week. It's tough when the Cubs are A, on the West Coast, and B, when it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You're like, oh, man, it's hard to stay up. I know you're a little bit more of a night owl than I, but that's why I'm a Cubs fan. Day baseball, it's my thing.
Well, I also like day baseball, but I mean, I might fall asleep before some of these games. Let's just get into it. So the Cubs are back. They dropped 2 of 3 against the Rangers and then came home and absolutely crushed at Wrigley Field, which was great. But the guy I want to start with here is Shota Imanaga. He looks exactly as advertised. And so listeners to the show know that I do some fantasy baseball work in addition to doing my Cubs work. And one of the things that fantasy baseball people were saying after Shota's first start against the Rockies, well, they were saying two things. One, it's the Rockies, which, touche salesman, the Rockies look like a very bad baseball team. And I feel bad for Chris Bryant having to spend all of his time with the Rockies. You know, they're paying him buku millions of dollars, so I'm sure he'll be fine. But, like, that's a downer, man. The whole franchise seems very bad at baseball. That said, 20 swinging strikes, 9 strikeouts, 0 walks, took a no-hitter into the 6th inning. It's been a hot minute since I have seen a Cubs debut like that. And I understand that the wind was blowing in and that there were a bunch of hard hit fly balls that could have gone out on a different day. And does anybody in the universe believe that Shota doesn't also understand that? That, like, he was not pitching to the conditions to some extent? Because I heard a lot of people poo-pooing this as like, oh, those are home runs on a different day. And I was like, yes. And then I got to see Shota Imanaga against the Dodgers on a day where the wind was blowing out to left pretty freaking hard. And you know what he did? He induced a ton of soft contact, still didn't walk anybody, got a bunch of strikeouts, and kept the ball in the yard. The man is not a rookie. He knows he's a fly ball pitcher. And I think he understands where to throw the baseball to generate oppo weak contact or just weak pop-ups or whatever. I don't know. Maybe this is rose-colored glasses or rose-colored eclipse glasses, as the case may be. Danny, where are you on Shota? I think the Cubs have a stud here.
Well, I do too. And the reason why, I mean, he's going to have an outing at some point that you're going to be like, oh, well, you know, he blew up in that one. But they all do. Even great pitchers. Hall of Famers had outings where they blow up. But I don't think it's any reason to freak out. I don't think the fly balls are any reason to freak out. First of all, Wrigley's more of a pitcher's park than it's ever been. And part of that reason is because of the video boards blocking the wind. It just has been, there's been less homers at Wrigley than there were before. And also, it's cold more than it's hot. It's blowing in more than it's blowing out. You know, there's more months where it's not a hitter's park than there are that it's a pitcher's park. So Shota looks great. And his pitches, you know, he doesn't rely on just one thing to get the outs. His out pitches, this is the one thing that impressed me about him when I first saw him in Japan. He had a bunch of different out pitches. It was up, it was down, it was side to side. He is more of a finesse pitcher than anything, and I think he's going to approach every single hitter differently. And the more he gets to learn this league and the more tape he studies and the more he pitches against, especially guys in our own division, which he hasn't even faced yet, when he faces dudes a bunch, he's going to get better and better. I think it's a huge bargain. I'm surprised he went for so little, and I think his attitude too, coming in with the Chelsea dagger, you know, knowing Chicago fans, knowing how we are, doing his own research to endear himself to Chicago. I think it's just altogether an awesome situation. And the Cubs got themselves I think an all-star.
Yeah. I mean, at this rate, he's pitching like an all-star. Chris Konka, who may have been one of the other steals by the Chicago Cubs, getting Chris Konka to come from the south side to the north side, dropping nuggets on Twitter. And he dropped this one after Shota's second start. Shota Imanaga to start his MLB career, 10 innings pitched, which, by the way, the only reason that's not more is because of the rainout, which we'll talk about in a little bit. 10 innings pitched, 4 hits, 0 runs, 0 walks, to 12 strikeouts. This looks legit to me. And like, maybe one of those teams was the Rockies doing their thing in the court, like whatever. The other team was the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I watched that dude drop a splitter that Mookie Betts tried to turn on and could not. It was just like a weak fly ball to right. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a good day.
Well, and he got Ohtani, too. I mean, Ohtani also with a triple and a double in the game, but we won't go into that. You know, on that Friday game, I saw Ohtani, you know, you were at that game as well. I saw you after the game. And we got to see the best of both worlds. We got to see Ohtani hit a home run, a towering shot, and we got, and the Cubs won. So I got to see both things I wanted to see. But getting back to Imanaga, it's not that he's got the most overpowering stuff, but it's like the housing market. It's all location, baby. Location, location, location. And he can do what he wants. He can put that ball where he wants it, and he can change speeds effectively in a way that gets the hitters off balance. And that's what I'm saying. Side to side, up to down, fast to slow. Like, he's got the stuff. And it reminds me of Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish with the more high-end elite speed to go with it, but the mixing of speeds and the mixing of the pitches reminds me of that kind of prowess. And Kyle Hendricks, too.
Yu Darvish with a twist. So I actually think what Shota's doing is a little bit different in a key way. He has fewer pitches. It's a tunneling thing with the fastball off the splitter and then the fastball off the sweeper, depending on if he's facing a righty or a lefty. But the other thing that he's got that is different than Yu Darvish, and I have no idea if this is going to stick through an entire season, but by God, I hope it does. The man just pumps strikes, and he trusts the fact that he comes in with that 5'6" low release point that fools the batters into seeing his fastball as faster than it is. They were talking about this on the broadcast and absolutely nailed it, in my opinion. He's throwing 94, but it looks like 98 because of the way he drops down so low and the ball kind of rises up. It's an optical illusion, and it's working.
That's beautiful. No, and that's the kind of trickery we need, because you see that dudes that are dialing it up so much, it was a lot of injuries, and I know there's a lot of consternation around Major League Baseball about why the fact that there's more injuries, pitch clock, but velocity and spinning it as fast as you can, and all those things are contributing to this. But if you can get more done with just simple illusion, like your freaking Doug Henning or something, like, he's not the most recent illusionist I think I could have pulled from. Who's the guy that made Chris Angel? If he's the Angel of pitchers and could just illusion his way to success, I mean, that's going to be a lot less wear and tear on your arm. Maybe it's, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe it causes more wear and tear because he's allowed to make these illusions. But he's been durable this entire time. He's pitched in big games. He's got a lot of innings under his belt in Japan. And so far, he looks like, I wouldn't even say as advertised, Sarah. I'd say better than advertised. There were still questions with Shota Imanaga as to whether it would transfer over or if he didn't have the elite velocity that it wouldn't just get, you know, met with a big bat and get hit really far being a fly ball pitcher. That was the knock on him, but it's soft contact fly balls so far.
I mean, there is some hard contact, but the hard contact is staying in the yard because of the weather conditions. And also, and like, again, I just really don't believe that the man doesn't know that the weather is what the weather is. He knows he's throwing that way because he can. You mentioned pitcher injuries. I want to talk about this a little bit, even though so far the injuries that have struck the Cubs are of a little bit different variety. Jameson Taillon is currently working his way back from a back issue that he suffered in spring training. He was throwing a bullpen in Arizona last I heard, so it is possible that he could join the Cubs on this West Coast road trip. That would be great, especially if he is second half of the season, Jameson Taillon, because that guy was nails. Justin Steele, as we all know, has a hamstring issue. He was seen doing some soft toss on the field, so it does not look like a terrible hamstring issue. We're hoping that he'll be back by May. But the Cubs are in an absolutely devastating little stretch of schedule here, and they're lucky that their pitchers are not having some of the same injuries that other teams are having. Just in the last week of games, like 1 week of games, the Marlins lost Yuri Perez. He's having Tommy John surgery. Shane Bieber had two excellent starts. He's having Tommy John surgery. Spencer Strider had two okay starts. Felt something in his elbow. Definitely has a UCL sprain. He's getting a second opinion. Gerrit Cole didn't start the season because he had an elbow issue. It feels like there is a rash of pitching injuries at the moment. And I wonder how much the way the Cubs have sort of zigged a little bit while other teams have been chasing velocity and stuff could potentially protect some of their arms. Having a guy like Shota who's throwing 94 with an optical illusion might actually keep him healthier over the long term than chasing 98. Danny, am I crazy?
No, I actually think you're onto something there. I really do. And it's no secret that trying to push your body to the extent of human limits could break you. I mean, that's something we've known forever. And when I was growing up, 90 was where it topped out. If you know, when you were pretending to be a pitcher as a kid, you didn't pretend to throw 100. Only one guy could do that. You know, there would be like one guy that could throw 99 in the whole league back in the 80s. And then you'd be pretending to throw like 90, 92. You're like, here's my 92 mile per hour fastball. That sounded fast to us back then. Now you're like, oh, you're like Kyle Hendricks. You're pretending to be a slow baller, a knuckler. So I totally agree. You're going to see more injuries the more you try to dial it up. I mean, they've got also all these wearables and ways to measure these things. And so you're going to try to get more and more and more. Well, there is, I think, an actual speed that you can throw the ball until your tendon actually snaps in half. And there's like a physical amount of stress that you can put on that tendon. And it's, we're right about there. We're under it. It's like 115 and your arm snaps completely in half. It's something that happens, you know? So if you're right underneath that, and I might be totally talking out of my butt here, I've been known to do these things, but I saw something about this, that there is a limit to it. There obviously is. So if you're reaching up against that limit, you're going to see more injuries. You add a pitch clock to it, that just might be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And now you don't get that recovery time, and now you're going to see the rash of injuries. You can blame the pitch clock all you want, but that's not the fault of it. It's not the fault of the pitch clock. It's the fault of trying to get your body to compete at this incredibly high level, unreasonably.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not saying the Cubs starters are immune to this. Like, the pitching motion, I think, is one of those things that probably generates a ton of stress no matter what, whether you're throwing 94 or whether you're throwing 88, right? Like, that's just a repetitive motion thing. And one of the things that you know that I know about kinesiology back from my time running is that one of the reasons runners suffer from similar types of injuries, repetitive motion thing, right? Like, your body does that stress over and over and over again. But it is interesting to see how that could interact with all sorts of different things. I mean, the MLB Players Association came out with comments about the pitch clock, saying that they strenuously objected to shortening the pitch clock without more study. And MLB was just kind of like, nah, it's fine. I hate that. Like, I hate that reaction.
Yeah.
Is it fine? I don't know. But what I do know is that Major League Baseball changed a bunch of rules all at the same time. So it's impossible to isolate whether it's the pitch clock or whether it's the mound visits decreasing or whether it's something else. And is it likely just that? Probably not. It's probably some combination of guys trying to max out their velocity, guys throwing shorter stints but throwing harder during that entire time, guys throwing breaking pitches that they're chasing stuff on, and so they have to like contort their elbows and shoulders in weird ways that force them to do that, that then put stress on their tendons, like you were saying, combined with the pitch clock. But they don't know that the pitch clock did not do this. They didn't do a study. They ran this test for like 2 years in the minors, and they were like, go. They ran this test on a bunch of 22-year-olds. They did not run this test on a bunch of like 30, 35-year-olds who have been doing this all of their life. Don't act like we can't see with our own eyes that most of baseball's best pitchers are getting hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's terrible for the game as well. Yeah, it's absolutely terrible for the game if your best players are sitting out injured. I mean, look at Steven Strasburg, who just officially retired. You know, his entire career was basically spent on the shelf. And this is one of the most talented pitchers that have ever lived. You know, he was so good. And we just didn't get to see him. You know, they've got to be able to protect their players. And the players are obviously demanding that. And the fact that they wouldn't even... Oh, we don't see any correlation between the injuries and the pitch clock. Well, you also don't know because you haven't studied it at all. I mean, if they really wanted to, maybe each team gets an extra pitcher. I don't know. Like, maybe that would help. Six-man rotations now, it's going to be the norm just to keep the arms fresh. These things keep changing. Getting back to your original point, the Cubs did seem to zig and zag, even though we know it wasn't for reasons of, we think we're so smart because we don't want velocity and strikeout stuff on our team. Really, what it was is they're being cheap, and they don't want to pay for pitching, period, because they used to pay for it. Now they don't.
Indeed. Last two things I want to say here. There's a really good thread on Twitter from former Cub Robert Stock talking about the Tommy John issues and velocity. Stock, who you all may remember, threw well over 100. And he had this to say in part. I'm not going to read the whole thread, but he was talking about ways to lower the chance of Tommy John. And he said, the smoother the mechanics, the more constant the acceleration of the arm can be. If your brain recognizes your baseline healthy velocity, say 90% of maximum, you can always override your safety mechanisms and bring yourself to unsafe maximums. In fact, if you want to increase your velocity, you have to operate in that zone. Then he talks about like what it means to increase velocity and says, so why were there fewer Tommy Johns in the past? Pitchers could pitch in their 90% of their maximum safety zone and be effective at the MLB level. But if there's enough guys in the minors who are willing to push themselves to unsafe levels of exertion, that is no longer possible. Do you want to guarantee yourself a healthy UCL? Throw slower. Would you like to be pitching in the major leagues? Good luck doing so at anything less than your maximum.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's like a devil's bargain. And some people who with freakish abilities will be able to do it at a high level for a fair amount of time. But that's going to be more rare than it isn't. And so what are we going to look at? A situation where... like Sandy Koufax, everybody's Sandy Koufax, that you only get like a few really amazing years in the major leagues and then you're out because you blew out your arm. So does that mean that pitchers need to get paid like $50 million a year just, you know, because they only like a NFL player because their lifespan is now so much shorter? Like a pitcher past 30 is now garbage. Like what are we looking at? Like the crafty veterans thing of the past?
Well, yeah. Alex Chamberlain, who writes for Fangraphs, had a really decent point about that, saying, if this is the way pitchers are going to go, you have to pay them earlier. There has to be some sort of contractual way that pitchers don't just pitch their arbitration years, throw their arm out, and you don't hit free agency. Shane Bieber is supposed to be a free agent this year. The man just lost his shot at free agency. Brandon Woodruff, same thing last year. He was 1 year away from free agency, had all that shoulder issue, got non-tendered by the Brewers and had to sign like a bare minimum 2-year deal to stay with the Brewers and get a shot, which is what worth well less than that man had ever earned in free agency. This is going to be a problem. It is going to come up in the future CBA negotiations, and the players should fight for this one because their health matters and they should have a system where they get paid what they are worth when they are putting themselves in danger.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, every single union has hazard pay. It's like when I was I'm in the actors union, for example, there was one scene when I was in my 20s. I had to climb up this giant sculpture. You know, I'm, 25 feet in the air and I'm hanging off of this sculpture. And my union said, you got to pay that kid an extra $25 a week for climbing up the sculpture and risking his health. You know, so I got an extra $100 a month. An extra $1,000 for in case I fell off the sculpture. That's only fair. You know what I mean? Obviously at the major league level, we're talking millions of dollars at stake. Woodruff's a prime example.
Absolutely. That was a little bit of a tangent away from Cubs stuff, but I think it's helpful information for our listeners to know about as we look at pitching this season. We're gonna take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we're going to talk through this Rockies series. We're going to talk through the Dodgers series. We're going to look ahead to a West Coast road trip, which have not always been super friendly to the Cubs. But who knows, man? This is Craig Counsell's Cubs. It's a whole new ballgame, people. But first, a quick break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends.
For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, Danny, the Cubs swept the Rockies exactly as God intended. And if you want to be a team that is going to like try to, you know, thread the needle of we're an 85 win team, but we're going to overperform that and win 90 games and win the division or whatever, you have to beat the bad team. So it's great to see the Cubs beating up on the Rockies. But I got to admit, and I have a piece out right before the Dodgers series started, looking at the Cubs schedule, because April and May is rough, man. They're going to see the Dodgers. They've got a West Coast road trip. They're going to see the Padres and the Mariners and the Red Sox and a bunch of teams who are really good. They're going to see the Braves. They're going to see all of these teams.
Houston.
It's a really front-loaded schedule, right? And so you wish that you were playing that schedule with Justin Steele on the mound, and you wish you were playing that schedule with Jameson Taillon on the mound. And you really hope that you can get through this period, get those guys back, and be somewhere near the top of the division, not anywhere near the bottom of the division. So I have to admit, I was real nervous with the Dodgers coming to town. And the Cubs took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers, Danny. That was pretty fun to see. What did you see from that series?
Well, yeah, and if the umpire could see, maybe it goes better for us in Game 2, because the Cubs had a lot of opportunities early on Yamamoto in the loss. And, you know, it felt like they could have blown Game 2 open and maybe gotten the sweep. Game 1 I was at. That was a lot of fun. Beautiful day out there in the bleachers. Looked a little bit cold in the bowl, but out in the bleachers, it was nice out there in the sun. I got on television. I don't know. I was wearing my captain's hat that I made for a Sunranto fashion design competition that we're doing. And they put me on TV while I was chanting, "Let's go Cubs," at a pivotal moment where who was it out there? Was it Leiter Jr.? That was pitching, who needed to get a big out. Wasn't Almonte. I forget who it was. One of our bullpen guys was in there trying to get a big out. Dodgers were coming back in the game, and I'm up there chanting, "Let's go Cubs," wearing my captain's hat. And Boog said, "Oh, captain, my captain." And then he got the strikeout, or it was an out somehow. I forget what happened. But there was an out. The Cubs got their out. And it was all because of me and my captain's hat, I'm pretty sure. And that game ended crazy with that line drive. That was, they almost tied it right there. There was, I think, 2 on, and the line drive was caught by Michael Busch, who did great against his old team. Showed them up, hit a bases clearing triple. It was fun. I mean, the win was great to be at. Even at the loss, you got a Pat Hughes sweater shirt. Yesterday was a freaking total blowout, even though it was raining, but to leave all their fans crying about the weather and being miserable and the team was mad about it, you know, like, I don't care about the Dodgers. Cry about it. Dodgers, you came to Wrigley, you do poorly. We beat them last year at Wrigley. If you remember, we beat them last April as well. It was great.
Great couple start. Of things here. I'm going to go back to Friday's game. We'll work our way back. That game was wild. The Cubs were down 2-0 pretty quick and then came back, chased Bobby Miller in the second, putting up a 5 spot, which I really did not see coming. That was outstanding hitting on the part of the Cubs. Dansby Swanson is red hot at the moment, looking like the Dansby Swanson that the Cubs signed for one of the largest contracts in the history of the franchise. Totally agree with you that Michael Busch had himself a series. It was like, I'm going to show y'all what you were missing by trading me away. But he was not the only one with some nice defensive plays. I mean, Nico Horner saved that game. Absolutely robbed a single behind. Nico had a couple of plays in the series that were just unbelievable gold glove, second baseman type of situation over there. And that was a fun game. It was a lot of offense. It was the Cubs taking the lead, the Dodgers clawing their way back, the Cubs going a little bit more with the lead, the Dodgers clawing their way back. Got to see an Adbert save, which is his first save on the season. Pat had referred to it as his second save on the season. Weird little, or no, that was, wait, Adbert got a save later. Hold on.
That was his first save. That was officially his first save. And it was Merriweather I was thinking about before.
There was a game where we thought Adbert got a save that wound up being a win in the Rocky series because Neris blew the save.
Right.
So he couldn't get the win. So Adbert came in with a one-run lead, which should be a save situation, but did not get the save because the official scorer decided that Neris couldn't get the win, which meant that Adbert got the win. And for some reason in baseball, you cannot get both a win and a save. Adbert has one save and one win, not two saves, people. And I apologize. Well, I spread the misinformation about that on Twitter because I thought it was a save.
Yeah, and, you know, our bullpen, I mean, they've been used a lot more than I think we wanted to use them. That game one, Hendricks, just, you know, like you said, he gave up those runs in the first. He hasn't looked real sharp so far this season in his two starts that he's had. He only went four innings. And when you already have a bullpen that's taxed due to being overused because you're going to do your Jordan Wicks at the end of it and you don't have Tyone to eat innings and Justin Steele is gone. So they had to bring Ben Brown up and now Daniel Palencia is up because Merriweather's on the shelf. It just gets harder and harder to see where these innings are going to come from as the season sort of unfolds. And you're like, wait, we're running out of arms. If at some point you need a really long start out of somebody, and I don't know who it's going to come from. I thought it was going to come from Imanaga. He had a 6-pitch inning yesterday, but the stupid rain made it so that the bullpen needed 5 of yesterday's innings too. So
he had he had a 4-pitch inning and a 6-pitch inning back to back. And I truly, this is another reason, not to go back to the Shota segment that we already did, but this is another reason that I firmly believe this man is pitching to the conditions. He knew he needed quick outs. And if you look, there were people, I'm in the pitcher list Discord, and there were people all worried. They're like, oh my God, his velo's dropping, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, well, it's 35 degrees and raining heavily in Chicago. And he just got out of 2 innings on 10 pitches. Like, I think he did this on purpose.
Yeah, it seemed like that. The only problem is the Cubs kept scoring runs, and their half of the inning took for freaking ever as they – I mean, I wouldn't say we faced the Dodgers' best pitchers on Sunday. We faced some young guys that didn't have a lot of experience, but they, you know, they, as I said, on – Saturday against Yamamoto, they really had some opportunities against a very elite pitcher. You know, Imanaga, yeah, like you said, he's doing the smart pitching thing, which better to be smart than talented in a way. You can get more done, especially when the chips are down, by knowing what to do as opposed to just going max effort at all times and doing it stupidly. But unfortunately, he only had, 40-some-odd pitches on Sunday. I'm wondering if they move him up. Do you think that's possible? You don't want to ruin
I wouldn't, because in Japan, they usually pitch on 6 days rest. And so I think they're probably already being cautious with him. And like with the rotation, having the injuries it does right now, you cannot afford to lose the one guy who can pitch like an ace. So I would just leave it for right now. And honestly, Jordan Wicks has looked better than I thought Jordan Wicks was going to look. Like, that changeup is getting strikeout looks, which is great. He looked really good against the Dodgers. Better. Frankly, yeah. he deserved better. Jose Kwas came in and just ruined Jordan Wicks's excellent game.
Freaking bullpen.
Javier Assad has looked really good. Javier Assad isn't going to blow anybody away, but he's also looked really, really solid. And I was super impressed with Ben Brown coming in out of the bullpen to piggyback here a little bit, right? Like, I don't think I want to see Ben Brown against the best lineups in baseball, but I kind of am not that worried about it against the vast middle, if that makes sense.
No, I mean, Ben Brown is a really talented pitcher. And, you know, the more experience he gets, the better it will be for the Cubs. I mean, you know, he had the one blow up when he came up in the well, that was in the Rangers series. He came up right away and they put him right out there and he had one good inning and then he blew up in another inning. And then he looked good against the Rockies when he came out. And, you know, he's just going to be learning and that's what we need. You know, we need the innings right now. So any kind of quality innings that you're going to give us, I was shocked as hell to see Daniel Palencia give us three innings yesterday. I didn't even know he could do that.
Palencia was great yesterday, and that was super helpful.
We're never going to see him again, are we? He probably got sent down.
No, he's going to be fine. No, he's staying up. He's going to be fine. I think he'll be up with the team for a while. I agree. Daniel Palencia had a nice three inning save there against the Dodgers. I do want to talk about this weather situation because honestly, look, I get it. Y'all are from LA and it doesn't really rain there. And these are terrible conditions relative to what the Dodgers are used to. And also, both teams had to play on the same field. It's Chicago in April, y'all. Like, this is something the Cubs deal with every season. It was nuts watching the Dodgers kind of whine about this whole thing. And like, frankly, I get it. Like the sort of like, Dan Kiermaier and his crew versus the weather trying to like get the field dry there right before they went into weather delay. Like that was very interesting, like baseball adjacent TV. And also they were clearly up against an impossible task. They probably should have called the game before that play. It wouldn't have changed anything. It would have given the Cubs one less run to beat the Dodgers by. The fact that the Dodgers kept whining, I think the whining actually hurt their ability to win that game.
Yeah, probably did. Because, you know, they were just sitting there stewing for 3 hours in the clubhouse, being all pissed off. And then they had to come back out and they still sucked. And we kept scoring. The first thing we did when we came back from the rain delay was score. And so, you know, they probably should have called that, or not called it, but stopped play right before the Cubs batted, because it was really that bad. And I was driving down there at that time, right as they were calling it, and we have the windshield wipers going, and I'm like, they're playing? Like, I'm listening to the game, and they finally put a stop to it. I was listening to Miguel Esparza in Spanish, and he's like, well, finally, they got, you know, they stopped play. But it didn't really seem right. And then a guy that came to our rehearsal had been at the game. And he's like, I've never seen him play in such rain. And I was like, yeah, it was a little much. So the Dodgers did have a point, but it would have only been, like you said, one run, half inning earlier. That would have been, you know, we were both playing in the same weather. Cubs were scoring runs in the weather. They weren't. We were making the pitches in the weather. They weren't. What can you do? They came to win. We lost 2 or 3. They're not that good.
Honestly, the Cubs were the real losers there because they lost Shota for the day, and Shota was dealing. Yeah. Would have loved to get another inning or two out of Shota. He had barely thrown, and he was like killing the Dodgers. I'm like, I would have loved to see Shota third time through the order against the Los Angeles Dodgers. The last thing I'll say about the weather, and this is from Al's recap over at Bleed Cubby Blue. If you do not read Bleed Cubby Blue, what are you even doing? It's a great site, and we have game previews and recaps and wonderful game threads where you can hang out with all of your Cubs friends and chat about the game. Al made the comment, and I think this is on point. You could schedule the season smarter. Why is there an off day in Texas for the Cubs when the Texas Rangers play in a dome? But there are no off days for these Cubs-Dodgers games or Cubs-Rockies games in April. Why are the Cubs opening their season against two teams they only see once in the Rockies and Dodgers so that it's crazy hard to get them back here to reschedule on an off day as opposed to opening their season against the Brewers and Cardinals, who they're going to see multiple times over the course of the year, and you can just like push a game out to July or something? Like, there are some very easy schedule fixes here. Why don't you start the season with more games in Texas and Miami and all those places that have domes and let the Midwest start their season on April 10th? I mean, all of this seems predictable and easy, and I don't understand why Major League Baseball insists on putting these games that force the Cubs to play. Like, you remember, it's not just this game. There was like that game in 2018 against the Braves where it was like 32 degrees and the Braves were up by like 9 runs and the Cubs came back. Mostly because the conditions were terrible and they outplayed the Braves in terrible conditions. And like, sorry, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, I guess.
Yeah, it well, I'm hearing Michael Cotton from the Sun Ranta show in my head screaming and yelling and ranting because the MLB, not only could they just do it smarter, but they could do it in a way that would grow the game and make opening day even a bigger deal than it is. So you have a West Coast South opening day, and then you have an East Midwest opening day. And you make them at least on a Friday, you know, then not a Monday at 1 o'clock, something like that. So that most people, even if they can't go to the game, they can at least watch it, you know, or something. Monday at 1, nobody's watching the game. Most people are in a very Monday-ish Monday. The kids are had to get to school, practice. You got to get to work. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. It's so easy. And also, there should not be a game in Chicago until at least this coming weekend. Give me until mid-April. Play the first 10, 12 games on the road. Play them on the road. It is 70 degrees in Chicago today. The Cubs just left freaking town, y'all. It was 32 degrees and snowing. Snowing on Sunday or whatever day. It was snowing during the Rockies and up playing at night. Freaking White Sox getting snowed out on the south side of town. I mean, it is the dumbest thing, Sarah. They're so bad at it. It used to be a couple that did it, and I think they replaced them with an algorithm. And we're going to be seeing more and more of this in life as we get as humans with brains get replaced with AI who think they know better. But all it takes is one little mistake in the programming, and you're never getting your refund, you know, or whatever it be. You know, you're never going to talk to another human again. Nothing you ever, their customer service is over. Nothing will ever make sense from a human standpoint. It's all robots figuring it out for you. Welcome to the brave new world where you play baseball in April in Chicago.
In March. I appreciate algorithms making people's life simpler. And like, I have a bunch of friends who will take like, they'll have AI like pre-write something for them and then they'll edit it because they claim it's easier. I do not do that for anything. And I mean, I like the writing process. I like the riddling out in my head what word I think should be next. I like the fact that I sound a little bit different than perfect grammar sometimes. I write the way I talk. When you read a piece that I've written, I want you to be able to hear it in my voice with like weird comma splices and the pauses and the things that I sort of think about and ruminate on and say it's part of how I write. I will never, ever rely on AI to try to duplicate that and then edit it. I find it ridiculous. And I think I would lose a lot from what I get out of writing if I were to do that. But I understand why people do it. And I'm not judging people who do it. I am judging the fact that like the schedule was better when human beings did it and thought about things like Chicago is cold. Yeah. There's a dome in Texas.
Yeah.
If we schedule this here and it rains, it's easier to reschedule later. Perhaps the Cubs should have some off days in September. Like just weird little things that like used to be in the schedule easily and suddenly are not. And I do not envy the people who are in charge of the schedule. I'm sure it is a brutal task, but also be smarter about that, MLB. Come on now. Couple of other small things before we go here. I want to look ahead. The Cubs are starting a West Coast road trip. I don't love West Coast road trips for the Cubs, but I will say those were previous versions of the Cubs. They were not Craig Council managed clubs. I just feel like even when it's early in the season and it's not like that big of a time shift type of thing back and forth, like I do find that things just go wrong, man. Kyle Schwarber tears up his knee in that crazy field they play out in Arizona. The Cubs drop a bunch of games they shouldn't drop as they try to get used to the time zone difference. Like it just feels like these things always don't work out for the Cubs. So I'm praying that it's a new era of Cubs baseball and that the West Coast road trip is not nearly as bad as it has been in the past. Tonight, Monday, the 8th, Javier Assad will kick off against Yu Darvish, former friend alert, Yu Darvish, who's got a sparkling 2.3 ERA on 16 strikeouts so far this season, although he has yet to win a game. Tuesday is TBD against Joe Musgrove. And I imagine that's Justin Steele's spot. So what the Cubs did with that last time is Luke Little was an opener and then followed by Ben Brown. kind of think they might do something like that again, whether or not it's Brown, who knows. I will say I saw a stat that Luke Little has yet to give up an earned run. He has like one of the longest zero earned run streaks to start a year. And when I saw that stat, and I'm not looking it up right now, so if that stat is incorrect, I apologize that I'm about to rant about something that is not a correct stat because I didn't go fact check it or anything. But when I heard that stat, like as I was doing dinner and stuff, I was like, what do you mean Luke Little hasn't given up an earned run yet? The Cubs missed the playoffs by one game and Luke Little sat in the bullpen doing nothing.
Exactly.
Not used during that playoff stretch. Well,
exactly. Anyway. We have a new manager, so it makes a freaking difference maybe. I mean, he hasn't given up a run in his four games, four innings pitch this year. And last year, I'm looking it up right now, he gave up no runs. So.
Yeah, great. So Luke Little has never given up an earned run. And for some reason, David Ross just did not use him in a playoff stretch. Great work. Go Cubs, go.
Well, finally, yeah, for a whole week between September 20th and 28th, he just didn't appear.
The only lefty in the bullpen, he'd never given up an earned run. And he just sat there because I don't even
know. You got to ride your... Yeah, no, we needed one more... We needed one more Merriweather appearance. And you know, remember, didn't Merriweather, I don't know how many innings he was in every game.
Every game. It's probably why his shoulder is strained now. The series finale between the Cubs and the Padres will feature Kyle Hendricks against old friend Dylan Cease. Hendricks struggled a bit this year. And Danny, I mentioned this to you after the game on Friday or Saturday. I can't remember which, but I would not be surprised if Kyle Hendricks has reached the time where he probably should not face an excellent lineup third time through the order. He can get through two, but the third time, like when I saw him come out again with Mookie and Shohei and Freddie Freeman lined up, I kind of knew it was going to be bad, and it was.
Yeah, he's not fooling anybody anymore. So, yeah. And the Padres, they still are good. Let's face it. I thought they were going to take a step back. They really didn't. By acquiring Cease, for example, by not trading you, Darvish, like we did, you know, by keeping Tatis and Machado, and, you know, they still have got a good, really good team. So, yeah, that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get through the Padres. And, you know, at some point, the fact that we're asking so much of our bullpen and our young guys is good. The chickens will come home to roost. It's only April 8th. We got to get through the whole month. We need Tyone back. And even he isn't like the biggest upgrade to your staff. You need Steele back. They brought PCA out of the game yesterday. And my first thought was like, he's been traded for pitching. We got pitching. And then I was like, we got Shane Bieber. Oh, wait, Shane Bieber's on the shelf. Thank God we didn't trade for Shane Bieber. So I don't know. They need some help. And I thought maybe they're going to wait on your Cade Hortons and stuff. They might not be able to. Ben Brown might be getting some starts as opposed to Luke Little opener situations. You might need to bring up even more than that. I mean, who else have they got stashed at AAA Cubs?
Well, they've got Cade Horton.
Yeah, but who else?
Well, I think Cade Horton will be up in June or July. I don't think they're going to rush him, though, because he is an elite. They want him to be real settled and great when he comes up. Who I wish they still had that they don't have anymore? They traded DJ Hertz for Jamer Candelario.
Yeah.
And how much would I love it if they could bring up DJ Hertz and that ridiculous changeup up right now? That's former Cubs minor league pitcher of the year. DJ Hertz. RotoWire probable pitcher grid says that Tuesday's start is going to be Drew Smyly. In full disclosure, they said that last time too when they were wrong. It was Little and then Brown. I don't know what it's going to be, man, but we'll see how the Cubs do. This is not an easy stretch of baseball they have coming up. The Padres, then the Mariners, and then I think they go to the Diamondbacks, if I'm right. Those are three teams who are all playoff teams and or have been playoff teams recently. You got to face lineups with guys like Machado, Xander Bogaerts, Julio Rodriguez. I mean, I don't know, man.
Danny. Yeah, no, and yeah, and the Diamondbacks talk about the NL West. They really didn't give up. I mean, who is the weakest team right now? They all
it's the Rockies.
Oh, of course, yeah, duh. But then After that, I mean, the Dodgers are elite. The Padres, I would still say they have elite players. They might not be put together quite as well or as completely as the Dodgers. But then the Diamondbacks are young and exciting. They showed us that last year, and they added to that now. And then you got the Giants, who did they – they signed that third baseman that we should have gotten.
Matt Chapman.
Yeah, Matt Chapman.
I don't think the Cubs should have gotten Matt Chapman. But
I don't know. I've seen a little bit of Morel at this point. I know you had that in the notes, but I will say this. Morel, he's not good at third, but he's – I saw it the other day that his defensive runs saved were actually better than Dansby freaking Swanson's. So, and that's just the noise in the early season. It probably doesn't matter, but
fielding stats are so the best way to think of fielding stats and the way to think of hitting stats or pitching stats is as follows. If you're pitching, every time you throw a pitch, that's an event that we can learn something about. Right. So you throw 100 pitches in a game, you throw 200 pitches in two games, whatever it is. We get a sample size of like 200, 300, 400 pitches relatively soon in a month. Right.
Yeah.
If you're hitting, you take an at bat four or five times a game, depending on if you stay in the game the whole time, whatever. Say 3 to 5 times in a game. Depending on how long that at bat is, we have a certain number of batted ball events that we can learn about. Your numbers basically stabilize right around 50 batted ball events for some stats, but it takes a little bit longer for some other stats, right? So that's 10 games of hitting or something that you have to have at minimum as a full-time player before we know anything about you as a hitter in that particular sample size. A fielder gets some random number of times that a ball is hit at them in a given game. It might be once, it might be 5 times, whatever. Tally that up. How long do you think it takes to get 50 batted ball events to you as a fielder? It takes months.
Yeah.
It does not take games. It takes months. The Morel stuff is like, I don't think the Cubs need Christopher Morel to become Matt Chapman. The Cubs need Christopher Morel to become Aramis Ramirez.
Yeah.
Aramis exactly. Ramirez was not the best third baseman in the history of the world, but he could stop a ball down the line. He could accurately throw the ball to first base and he could make a double play. Nick Madrigal can stop most balls that do not go out of the range of his 5'4"-ness. And I say this as a person who is 5'1" and understands that, like, there are just limitations to how far you can reach when your arms and body are shorter than other people. He can pick the ball and throw it across the diamond accurately to first. The thing that Nick Madrigal cannot do, there are two of them, and he's not going to be able to do them, people, and I'm sorry about this, but it doesn't show up in defensive runs saved, and it doesn't show up in outs above average, because those are range stats about what balls he stopped. He's not good at starting double plays. He's not good at turning two, because you have to be able to stop the ball and quickly fire, and it has to be quick enough to get to first base, right? So I feel like the Cubs miss out on double plays there. There are balls he cannot get to. His range is better than expected for where he is. There are times that Christopher Morel can jump and catch a ball that when Nick Madrigal tries to jump and catch that ball, it's out of his reach. That's no shade to Nick Madrigal, and he's more accurate at that because he has to try harder. And Christopher Morel kind of gets in his head sometimes and I think messes those things up mentally, like when a ball like pops into his mitt and pops out or something. But like the reason, and this rant for another day, but like it was malpractice that the Cubs just let Christopher Morel not really practice his defense for a year and a half when he was 22 and 23 years old.
Yeah.
Part of the reason Madrigal is so much better at some of those things than Morel is because he got work doing the thing.
Yep.
Like absolutely. If you don't practice something for a long time, I play the piano. If I never practice playing the piano and I try to sit down and play a song, it's not going to sound as good as if I practice it a few times.
Every day. Yeah, exactly. No, and that's absolutely the truth. And we're going to see that now. It's malpractice. And unfortunately, we can't go turn back the clock. But we also can't turn forward the clock because the sun keeps going. And as we keep spinning around it anyway, and it's starting to get covered. We're starting. Oh, the eclipse has started. So I would like to go outside with my cereal box and foil with the pinhole in it. And then stare at it briefly anyway, even though they say
Don't do that. It hurts your retinas. Don't be that guy.
Do nothing.
Danny, we can wrap this show up. We'll be back next week with whatever's going on with the Cubs West Coast round trip. But before we get to that, where can people find you? Where can they find your work when you're not staring at the sun?
At Sunranto, S-O-N-R-A-N-T-O. And save the date. We're having a big festival, Ranter Fest. We're going to have a big party Friday, Saturday, Sunday, May 31st through June 2nd, with the big event being June 1st at Almost Home. So save the date, everybody. We're throwing a big party. And then we're going to go to the game and get a Christopher Morel bobblehead where he's taking his shirt off.
Sounds great. You can find me at BCB underscore Sarah. You can find my writing at bleedcubbyblue.com. While Danny is outside trying not to stare at the sun, I will be outside getting some steps and singing Total Eclipse of the Heart in my head, because that's,
Turn around, bright eyes.
It's a great song, man.
Turn around.
Turn around every now and then. I mean.
Oh, yeah. I recorded it for my other job just this weekend, in fact.
All right. And on that note, go Cubs. Please defy what history with this West Coast road trip. Until next time.